Davis Vinopto up here for another week of the Tribuna podcast. Let's run through the scores from the match day. Cologne beat Werder Bremen 4-3 in a very, very exciting game. And that was probably the most exciting Friday game of the season. Bayern beat Darmstadt to officially relegate them with a 1-0 win. Gladbach and Augsburg drew. Ingolstadt and Leverkusen drew as well. Frankfurt and Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg won that 2-0. Hertha lost to Leipzig in the late game, basically confirming Leipzig as a Champions League team. Hamburg drew with Mainz 0-0, and Freiburg beat Schalke 2-0. But the biggest result of the match day was the result on Saturday for third place. Dortmund against Hoffenheim. Dortmund won that game 2-1, but it's been pretty much a lifetime since that game actually happened. There's been a lot of friction that has come out in many different reports, basically revealing that there's huge friction between Thomas Tuchel and Hans-Joachim Watzke, the team president for Borussia Dortmund, and of course Michael Zorc, the sporting director, is in the fray as well. But this friction has a little bit to do with the Dortmund bus attack, but it definitely goes back way farther than that. So I wanted to give this opportunity for Jonathan Harding, who's sitting next to me on the left, and Ross Dunbar, who's sitting next to me on the right, to basically describe the scene for you, ladies and gentlemen. All right, Jonathan Harding, take it away. Basically, describe the kind of the history between these two, Tuchel and Watzke.
Well, I think it goes a little bit further than just Watzke. I think there's... You know, doing the digging, and I wish to stress that I haven't done this really myself. And the local journalists who work on a much greater basis and more daily coverage than I do deserve all the credit for finding this out and being involved. But it seems that the evidence is quite damning when you look back at the number of incidents that have occurred now since the end of the cup final last year. If you trace it back to that point, I think Tuchel and Watzke and the club generally and his players have had a difficult relationship. I think it's built from sort of different points of friction that have continued to occur over that period of time. I think you're looking at something like a year and a half now. And, you know, it's only an inevitability that after that much time with that much friction that things would come to an head, I think.
But you just mentioned some of the events. Let's talk about, outline some of the major events that has happened to make this relationship go as bad as it seems to be reported.
Well, I think when Dortmund lost the cup final, you know, Thomas Tuchel coming out publicly and sort of saying Mats Hummels' performance, you know, well, he could have done better. This was obviously after Hummels has announced his decision to leave, and then having that sort of calling him out, you know, he was captain and it was a bit uncomfortable. And I think he didn't handle that particularly well. You know, the side lost on penalties. It was a close game. Perhaps could have done with a bit more sympathy for the players in that stage. Didn't handle some of the behind-the-scenes situations. I don't think Subotic and other players were allowed in the hotel. They weren't involved. They're part of the squad, so quite a difficult situation. Mm-hmm. Have to look at Blaszczykowski's departure as another one, for example. I believe that Tuchel's official line on that was, well, he's competing against Piszczek now for the same sort of position. Blaszczykowski then comes out and says, well, I don't know why he said that because I haven't spoken to Thomas Tuchel in over a year. So there's some sort of contrasting statements there about handling players and situations like that. But, you know, you look at key moments. The recruiting of players has obviously been a bit of an issue. Sven Mislat, the chief head scout at Dortmund, was involved in the signing of a number of great players, including Aubameyang, Lewandowski and Dembele. Wanted to bring in Oliver Torres. Tuchel changed his mind at the last minute, didn't want to sign him. There seems to have been a bit of a fallout about that between Tuchel, Mislintat and Watzke and Zorc. It feels like at the moment Watzke and Zorc sidelined with Mislintat afterwards. So from that point on, Tuchel and the chief head scout of the club have not had a very good working relationship, if any. That's obviously caused problems. He hasn't been coming to any of the training sessions. So that's, you know, been an ongoing issue. We've talked about it a lot, but the departure of Hummels, Gundogan and
Mkhitaryan.
Thank you.
He went to Manchester United, so it's easy to forget him.
Well, all at the same time, after Vatska said that not all three would leave at the same time, is another point that Tuchel is obviously frustrated about. You felt like they were building something. They had a record-breaking season under Tuchel in his first year. They finished second, but the greatest second place, I think, in the history of the Bundesliga. Mm-hmm. And you felt like something was building, and there was clear frustration from Tuchel's perspective that losing those three players meant that, you know, building whatever he was building is now a much greater task. This season, defeats to Frankfurt and Darmstadt, Tuchel has already come out and said after those games, you know, we're just not good enough, basically. Maybe the club needs to realise that this is what we're capable of, losing these types of games. So there's been, if you read between the lines, a lot of issues. And then obviously with the bus attack, and the way that Tuchel feels he wasn't listened to, even though Vatska says there was an opportunity for him to come out and say something and make a decision, but he didn't. And so that's why the decision was made to play the game afterwards, a day later. It's basically been building towards this point, and the bus attack serves as sort of a pivot for everything that's happened now, sort of snowballing downhill as a result from there. And then an article in the Süddeutsche Zeitung by Freddy Ruckenhaus reveals some fairly damning quotes from players, anonymous players, must be said, that obviously identity's been hidden. Ruckenhaus delivers a fairly, it's a damning profile of Thomas Tuchel, not favourable at all. And player quotes that say, you know, well, the suggestion that there was an improved closeness after the bus attack between the team and the head coach was a pure media tool. It was only something in the media. You know, that's a horrible thing to hear if that's really the truth. Mm-hmm. It doesn't suggest that there was much of a closeness at all in such a horrible situation. You'd think that the team would really come together. It certainly looked like that from the outside looking in, that was the case. There's been, you know, quotes in the same piece about too many tactics being played and a disgruntlement about a number of things. So really, it feels a bit like this article is sort of softening the blow or preparing Dortmund fans for a reality.
And that reality being that Tuchel's probably going to leave at the end of the season.
And it certainly feels like if you look at all of the things that I've just mentioned and all of the pieces being put together, it puts the professional relationship now between Thomas Tuchel and many members of the club in complete disrepair, and there's no way that I think that this can be resolved, which is in many respects very difficult for Dortmund and Dortmund fans, because what Tuchel has achieved on the pitch is nothing short of remarkable, really, considering in his first year he was coming on from Klopp and all of that emotion, and people accused him of not having that, and yet he gets it done in a very methodical way. And then now, having lost his spine, he still managed to deliver, getting Dortmund to a cup final, a Champions League quarter final with basically teenagers. Yes, there's some experience in that team, but they have in many respects exceeded expectations. I know the expectation was get into third, but I think from Thomas Tuchel's perspective, with this squad to achieve that goal, it's been an immense challenge. And you have to decide, but Vatska has to decide whether the right man is also the right coach. And I think the point here is that Thomas Tuchel is quite clearly the right coach for getting the results, but he might not be the right coach for the players. Maybe questionable that they haven't sort of stood up and been a bit more vocal, but it's obvious to me that he's not the right man for this club.
There's a lot of details obviously there. No, I mean, I don't blame any of you listening if you have to go back and listen to him somewhere, but it is a lot. But basically, Ross, what do we make of all this? What does it all come down to? We've talked about the Vatska side, we've talked about the Tuchel side, but basically, what are people, common fans like us, supposed to make of all of this?
Well, I mean, I think anyone who was informed in the situation, it's not a surprise that there's been friction between Vatska and Tuchel. I mean, it was already out in public before this weekend. It was just maybe not as
pronounced,
as volatile as it is now.
Yeah.
And certainly from my position, I've heard examples of, like, just kind of blow-on-blow arguments almost in the boardroom about transfers, for example. Like, so with the way Dortmund have their structure is that they have a transfer committee of four people, Vatska, Zoch, Mislintat and Tuchel, and each representative of whatever department will bring their player. And it's a case of, do you want us to sign this player? It's a case of a majority, right? So if I mean, I don't want to pick any examples in particular, but let's say Mikhail Zoc has particular contacts, particular agent contacts. If he brings a player to the table, and you can go and look at the players that Dortmund have, there's clear patterns in the type of player that they sign based on the representatives that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So if Zoc brings a player to the table, and he's very keen on it, Tuchel might go, nah, I don't want that player. But the rest of them might go, well, yeah, well, you'll take him. And that's a very complicated situation, I think. You can't, yeah. If Mikel Zoc is the sporting director, he has to be the guy making the decisions. It can't be a committee type structure.
Can't be a democracy.
No, yeah, democracy's bad, as we've learned. Not last year, nothing. but that's where a lot of the problems are coming from. You can see it again in the type of player that they've signed. You know, there's this kind of argument going on. Is he a Tuchel player? Is he not a Tuchel player? The overwhelming majority are not Tuchel players. Andre Schürrle, for example, is a Tuchel player, but he's turned out to be a disaster. So there's this kind of ongoing friction going on behind the scenes. It's very surprising for a club this size to have such petty squabbles going on behind the
scenes.
And so
publicly, in many respects.
I have to be honest, I think Vatska has to take a huge amount of blame for this. I know that Dortmund fans will probably want to kill me by saying that, given what he did for the club, and I think it's important to mention, you know, he was the guy led the campaign to save the club, essentially. He was the guy at the last hour, you know, finishing off the deal to keep the club in business. However, he's a very difficult guy to deal with. He's not a guy that you can really compromise with.
Mm-hmm. I feel like Pep Guardiola.
Right, but I mean, I think you look at his character in the media, constantly doing interviews, constantly commenting on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think he should be doing that. You know what I mean? Like, I think a club of that size, the CEO.
So are you talking about Vatska?
Yeah, Vatska.
Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, there's like an exclusive interview with him every day.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and it going behind the manager's back, mm-hmm. and commenting on games. This is a very German thing. I mean, in the UK. The CEO is not going to come out and say,
Rummenigge does that as well, but it seems that
it's
more reserved.
Yeah, exactly.
It's slightly different in Bayern. That's, you know, Ernest and Rummenigge is like the police down there as well.
Right,
so,
exactly.
I mean, but I think I totally agree. I think Basker's voice has been out too much in the media this season. But I think the pivotal point of all of this and the sort of deciding moment or choice of interview was with the VATS, which is West Allgemeine Zeitung, Westdeutsche Allgemeine Zeitung, where he came out before the Hoffenheim game was asked, so you're saying that there was a disagreement between you and the head coach,
mm-hmm.
about the handling of the bus attack game? And he said yes.
Yeah.
He admits to there being a disagreement the day before the biggest game by the cup final in Dortmund's season in terms of, you know, squad planning for the summer, making the Champions League. Now,
and
the timing of that.
Yeah, and you can even hear it in the interview that Tuchel gave to Sky before the game. He's like, this topic is so much bigger than this match day. And we were watching that together, and I was just like, yeah, that's, if a coach says that it's bigger than the match day.
It's got to be very different. Situation for Thomas Tuchel there, because, you know, to have that then publicly, you know, come out. I mean, obviously there's been journalists who cover the club from day to day and not surprised that this has come to the fore because of Tuchel's character, but also because of Vatska's. There was a really good piece, I think, by Pat Bomman in Schatzko, which is Dortmund's number one fanzine, where he says there are three alpha males here, and they've come together and they realise that they can't work together, they can't pull on the same rope,
mm-hmm.
and that's basically the issue. You've got Vatska, Zorc and Tuchel, all three of whom clearly have an idea of how they want to run a club,
mm-hmm.
How they want to run a football team, who they want to sign, how they want it to go, and not all of them can agree. If they can't agree on players, then there's not much hope of them being able to agree on other things, and I think that's a real problem. And I think the all the events we've talked about, all the things going forward, have just sort of added to this friction. And then Vatska coming out and saying, yeah, there's been a disagreement. It gets to the point where you think, okay, they're obviously going to sit down and talk about it in the summer. And Tuchel's agent has said that Thomas wants to stay. But, I mean, he's almost obliged to come out on record and say that, given the press that's happening right now. I'd take it with a huge pinch of salt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it definitely seems like a breakup is coming. I mean, to give a little bit more context, Tuchel's deal has one season left on it, so it expires at the end of the 17-18 season. But is a new coach going to solve anything? There's been a lot of names that have been thrown out there. Lucien Favre's name has been...
Most ridiculous name I think I've ever heard. I mean, really, Lucien Favre is like Thomas Tuchel, just a bit older and a bit grumpier. Like, if you're looking to replace the issues at hand, then don't replace them with the same issues.
Yeah.
Lucien Favre, anybody who knows the Bundesliga, he walks out of Hertha off his own back, you know, and then he's only really been kept at Gladbach and did so well there because Max Eberl is excellent at his job. And I think that's one... Obviously, he's a good coach. But if we're talking about coaches, then we wouldn't be getting rid of Thomas Tuchel. I don't think that's the problem.
Yeah.
Football-wise, nobody can disagree that Thomas Tuchel's been fantastic for Borussia Dortmund, but...
I mean, obviously, it came from the Swiss media, so... I mean, you can take that... Well, you take that with a pinch of salt.
Lucien Favre is Swiss, by the way, to give more context.
But, again, I mean, and John touches on this, and again, it's... We're very critical of the social media age, but again, everyone going, oh, look what he did at Gladbach, he was a great coach. Yeah, but you forget that he tried to resign every 6 months. He would not be in that job for so long if Max Eberl wasn't so persuasive and so good at what he was meant to do. I just think that would be an absolute disaster, to be honest. Not even from the man managing point of view and the relationship within the club, but also from a football perspective. The two don't fit at all. From a stylistic perspective, doesn't fit. So... Let's say the next step could be Nagelsmann, for example. Are we getting to a point where Vatska and Zorc will only take a coach who doesn't answer back or doesn't have his own vision of the club? I think that's a very unhealthy.
I think it's unhealthy, but I think it's interesting that both Bayern and Dortmund are facing the situation. You've got to bear in mind that Bayern basically got their patience worn thin after 3 years of Pep Guardiola and took a very laid-back coach. I'm not saying that Carlo Ancelotti's not a top coach, obviously he is, but it's a very different kind of style. You know, Carlo shakes hands and does the things and no problems. He's not roaming around saying, why aren't we training for the fifth time today? You know, like, it's a very different environment. And I think if Dortmund feel that Thomas Tuchel's intensity is too much, and this conflict and these, you know, in some cases some questionable decisions off the field with the squad, if they feel that that's not what they want in the next head coach, then you need someone who's gonna just put their head down and do the events and say yes and not cause a stir. But you also need someone who's gonna be the right type of coach for these players, and that's a very difficult coach to find in the current climate. Yes, Julian Nagelsmann is obviously the name that jumps out, but the guy has worked extremely hard to get Hoffenheim to this point. On the one hand, I don't really see it. Is he gonna leave the team without really enjoying his reward? No. And you've got to bear in mind, this is a guy who's been extremely successful because he's coaching a group of players who are young, who are relatively inexperienced, and he has been in charge of all the way through the process. He comes to Dortmund, he has to deal with this entire process, right, post the balloon bursting, and egos, people who have like serious issues. Obviously, Emre Moore is one of these people in the team, one of these players who's not happy about a number of things, right? The kid is what, 18, 19, right? He's still in development, right? Nagelsmann may be perfect for his football development, but Moore's probably got a few things to learn in terms of maturing, and that's completely acceptable. The kid is 19. It's only normal, right? But that's a lot to walk into for Nagelsmann. So I think as much as these names are being bandied about, on the one hand, I'm not sure about any of them, and on the other, we've still got to have a look at Thomas Tuchel's situation. He's got 3 games left to go in the season.
Yeah.
He's got Augsburg, Bremen. Let's bear in mind that if he doesn't lose that home game, he's never lost at home with Borussia Dortmund in the league in 2 seasons. Hello, that's incredible. And if he wins the cup final, he's going to go out as one of Dortmund's most successful managers and then be fired, having won. And that's a very weird situation for a club to have to handle, let alone their fans.
Yeah, well, I mean, like you said before, Dortmund seems to still be getting it done on the pitch, despite the fact that that all of this is happening behind the scenes. Now, there has been suggestion that it has somewhat come onto the pitch, and maybe their game against Cologne was maybe a something like that, where they looked a little bit flat. Maybe it was, if they didn't get lucky against Hoffenheim with the refereeing decisions, who knows how this game could have gone. So maybe it is, in fact, starting to affect their on-field performance, but we just haven't seen it because Dortmund are fortunate enough to not have lost in this stretch.
I think Nagelsmann sort of, you know, it was a bit of a difficult one. The game with the whole context of the Tuchel situation, and then also on top of that, the fact that Nagelsmann is being touted as a replacement. You know, you got to bear in mind, after the game, Dortmund win, 25,000 in the Zoo Tribuna start singing, you know, fairly damning insults towards Hoffenheim and Dietmar Hopp, which you can expect because the two clubs are completely contrasting. And in many eyes, it's not really a club that Dortmund are playing. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know...
A project,
yeah, exactly. But Nagelsmann's sort of walking towards the halfway line to say, you know, thanks to his team. And he sort of gives a thumbs up to the Südtribüne in the sense of like, yeah, thanks, guys. Nice one. Yeah, throw some insults. You know, and I think it's an uncomfortable environment if you think, like, basically a month later, he's being unveiled. That's why I don't get it. I don't think if you follow the steps that he's going to do that. The game in itself, yeah, Dortmund got a bit very lucky. You know, Marco Reus is 15 countries offside for his goal. And then, you know, the dive for Hoffenheim's penalty is frustrating. Aubameyang misses a horrendous penalty. But in the end, he's also there to score the winner. So, you know, that's the value of him. He can appear and disappear and then appear again at key times. But winning the game... Hoffenheim are obviously left a bit burned, and Alexander Rosen saying the only thing missing was the hole in the net, which was obviously a hint to Stefan Kiesling's ghost goal against them, which is quite funny. Winning the game puts Dortmund in a great position, probably take third, wonderful. But there was this feeling the whole time that this whole circus, this whole noise, it's not healthy for a football club's media narrative to be predominantly about non-sporting aspects. And I feel like in the last few months at Dortmund, it's not been about Christian Pulisic having a fantastic season or
Marco Reus
coming back after his 700th injury,
yeah,
and Ousmane Dembele being excellent and well beyond his years eventually after a couple of months bedding in. You know, it's not about that, unfortunately. It's been about a very uncomfortable situation between a head coach and a club structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you, I don't want to take sides, but I am going to do that. And I think it amazes me that Vatska is almost facilitating this kind of circus. You know, he's the guy coming out before games and giving interviews. I saw one of his quotes, something like, oh yeah, we'll decide at the end of the season, but it'll be based on the placing of the table. Well, I'm sorry, but I mean, a club of that size and an operation of that size should not be judging on such narrow margins, right? I mean, okay, if Dortmund finished 6th or 7th, then you've got a problem. But if they finish 2nd or 3rd, I mean, it shouldn't really matter. And he was talking about the cup final as well. And I find that kind of comment from Vatska to be very uncomfortable. I'm also very uncomfortable with the players coming out behind his back.
And also not coming out in many respects.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, coming out behind his back and saying what they said in this piece, in the Süddeutsche, but also... Where I don't see very many players. I know it's a difficult situation and maybe they're not allowed to, and who knows, and this is the other thing I've taken into account, what is really the truth, it's difficult to know, but where are the players saying, yeah, Thomas Tuchel has brought me forward as a player, he's been the best coach for me in the last 2 or 3 years, or he's been the right character for me, you know?
There's been examples of Julian Lyle coming out and saying that, Christian Pulisic coming out and saying that. Now that would suggest to me that it's a generational thing. The younger players are not coming out behind his back.
Absolutely.
It's not Dembele, it's not Pulisic, it's not Weigl.
Absolutely.
So is it coming from
more senior players?
Weidenfeller, and I'm really uncomfortable with that. I mean, does that make the relationship in any way tenable until the end of the season? If Tuchel goes into the dressing room and knows that players are going behind his back,
and knows that there's a clear division in the squad between who's on his side, who's on Zork's side, who's on Vatska's side, who's on Mislintat's team.
Mm-hmm.
I think that much division inside a club is not really surprising that we've got to this point, where after so much division, you're looking at a massive crack in the relationship.
Now, we don't know what's going to happen, obviously, with how all of this unfolds, but if Thomas Tuchel does end up leaving Dortmund,
I think we can be fairly sure of that. I mean, obviously, nothing is 100%.
Nothing is 100%, but let's just give it, still put an if there.
Okay.
What does he do next? Does he go on another sabbatical? Does this kind of spat hurt his reputation, or is it just a situation that didn't work out?
I also think how it ends will be very important. At the moment, it's clearly a fight to see who ends up with less dirt on their hands, and Vatska's doing his best to make sure that nobody's looking at him at the end of it, you know. I think the best that Thomas Tuchel can do is win out. If he wins the two games in the league and he wins the cup final and he gets Dortmund into the Champions League automatics and he leaves with a trophy and he's taken it, and he can leave saying, I've been successful here on paper, I've been successful in terms of developing players, I might not have won everybody over, I might have made some bad decisions, but his record in terms of a coach is very much intact in that sense, I think, in terms of the sporting aspect. Then it's up to whoever wants to employ him to find a solution to deal with the potential question marks around some of his decisions. Mm-hmm. So then you maybe employ a Max Abel type of guy, a kind of sporting director to provide the guidance or to paper over the cracks and to deal with that kind of situation. I think he might well take some time depending on how the situation goes. I think it's also an emotional process for a human being to go through this.
I mean, he did take a year off, so I mean, it's definitely within the cards.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very possible, but I think a lot of what happens will depend on how the situation goes over the next month. I think we can be fairly confident that by June, I think by the middle of June, we'll know who Borussia Dortmund's new manager could be. I feel like July there's going to be a clear point. By the end of May, the cup final, I would expect within a day or two of that to be Thomas Tuchel, thank you very much, bye bye. Okay. And Lars Pullman wrote a very good piece on the Yellow Wall Pod on their website, who obviously the Dortmund English speaking podcast, about his feelings and also about the situation. And he's very confident, and this is a guy who knows an immense amount of information about the club. He feels very confident that Tuchel will go, and I get that feeling from a lot of people around who are fans who know the club. And I wouldn't be surprised if we were looking at a situation in June where we were sat down and we had to draw up names and we'd say who's going to be the next guy. Who that guy is a real problem, because we just talked about the names and the situation to walk into that is very, very uncomfortable for a manager.
Does Tuchel coach in Germany again, Raz?
Does he coach in Germany? Possible, yeah. I mean, I don't think it will affect his reputation, especially if he goes out on a high. Mm-hmm. I think Germans are well informed about the situation, so I don't think domestically his reputation will be under threat. I also think in the English market, I don't think it will be that much of a problem.
No,
I could see him going to England. I mean, his English is very good.
Absolutely.
I think that league would present a huge challenge. You look at Guardiola going there and not having his own way.
Yeah.
That's something you'll probably want to crack at some point.
Definitely.
But I could see him in the foreseeable future possibly being a German national coach or being a Bayern Munich. Could see that happening. I don't think we had the argument with Klopp whether Klopp would go to Bayern. I don't think that would happen. I think Klopp's emotional connection to Dortmund is really, really strong. But with Tuchel, I don't think that's the case. And I think if the good is an offer on the table, then I think he would probably listen to it.
And I think that's been one of the biggest criticisms, I think, amongst a lot of observers from a Dortmund perspective, that as much as Tuchel did a lot of good work, he never really arrived. You know, very rarely was he the type of manager. I can't really recall more than maybe a handful of times where he was stood in front of the Südtribüne after a game. He's not really that kind of guy. And that's okay. But I think Dortmund need that kind of guy. Or at least the fans do. I think it's important at that club. And yeah, you talk about Premier League for him. I think that's absolutely a destination, and I think a lot will depend on how the summer landscape pans out. If Arsene Wenger leaves Arsenal, that's a very, very possible route for him to go. I think they would need a stronger character, like a strong character, to come in after someone who'd shaped the club for so many years. It's a bit like doing an extended version of Klopp. You know, Klopp has shaped Dortmund and then he comes in. Mm-hmm. Arsene Wenger has basically shaped Arsenal in the modern era. There's a strong possibility that he could go there. I don't know whether it takes such a long sabbatical, because I think now he's raised his profile enough. But I do think he needs to win the cup final, because it's important to say that he actually has got some silverware. Mm-hmm. You know, we've actually done something all the way to the end. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that cup final comes in May against Eintracht Frankfurt. Their next two games are not actually that difficult, if I remember correctly. Of course, they're still battling with third for Hoffenheim. I remember, Jonathan, you say that Dortmund, in terms of, since of their stature, they need third place better than Hoffenheim. But they only play play Augsburg and Werder Bremen on the last 2 days. They go to Augsburg and host Werder Bremen in Signal Iduna Park. So maybe those two games can be just the cream puffs he needs to kind of get his team ready for the cup final, and he can get those last 3 wins, like you said.
Maybe. I mean, but it would also, you can flip it round, you know. Say that he beats Augsburg and then he loses to Bremen, so he loses the home record, and then he loses the cup final. You know, you have to think of it the other way. And you look at Klopp, right? They sneak into seventh and then lose a cup final. I mean,
well, I guess it's true. By the time Klopp got to the cup final, he was already gone. Maybe that's the same.
I don't think the situation has too many similarities, but I think it's interesting how Klopp said he didn't feel like he was the right coach for Borussia Dortmund anymore in his press conference. And you can tell the relationship between Klopp and Vatska was very much a, this is my friend, we're very close here. I think the line may be similar from Tuchel. I'm obviously not the right coach for Borussia Dortmund anymore, but I don't think
it'll be as positive.
It will be as emotional a departure. Maybe it will be for the cameras, but I think if you read into that,
there'll be a departure press conference like last time.
Absolutely.
All right, well, I mean, Dortmund, of course, play two relegation teams, or one relegation team, not one anymore. Sorry, Werder Bremen, I still think that for some reason that you're in the relegation zone, even if you're clearly not. And the relegation race is actually pretty much still wide open. We still don't know what's going to happen with that. Of course, with Ingolstadt and Leverkusen straw, and of course, Gladbach and Augsburg straw, there's still not very many points between the bottom teams. I mean, to put real numbers to it, it's just, I mean, the 16th with Hamburg is 34, but Leverkusen at 12 is only 37. So basically, there's still five teams in there. So let's do this a little bit more definitively than we did last week. I think I asked this question last week, but let's be a little bit more concrete. Who is going to be in that relegation spot? Because it seems like nobody's playing the football that they want to play to stay up.
Hamburg. I think the Hamburg Mainz game was, I remember I got in and I texted Ross and was like, how bad is it? Might be the worst game I've ever seen. And I thought that's the kind of evidence I was hoping not to hear, but it says everything, you know. Yeah. You get beyond nervous and it gets terrible. Leverkusen Ingolstadt wasn't much better anyway, and Augsburg robbed themselves of three unbelievable points with a 94th minute equaliser from a former player. So, you know, it's close, it's tight, and it's going to come down to who's in form and who looks more like it, you know. And to be honest, Augsburg drawing that game was a bit of a disaster for them, but they have collected, I think, 7 points in the last four games, so actually form wise they should be fine, and that's what concerns me. Hamburg have been woeful, and on the final day they play Wolfsburg, who haven't been great, but at least have Mario Gomez, and Andres Jonker has basically just decided, as you saw in Frankfurt, get it wide, get it to Intep, put it in the box, and Gomez will score one or two of 12 chances. And that worked. I don't see any real plan from Hamburg. So I'm going to go with Hamburg in the playoff.
Okay. The concern is that Hamburg gets sucked into actually automatic relegation.
I think the draw between Hamburg and Mainz and Leverkusen sneaking a point against Ingolstadt makes that harder now, because it's a 4-point gap with two games to go. And Hamburg could lose both,
right?
And Ingolstadt could win both. But
not impossible.
It's a bigger task now. I think if Hamburg had lost to Mainz and Ingolstadt had in fact beaten Leverkusen, we could be talking about that.
That Kai Havertz equaliser
basically saved them from automatic
Huge.
Yeah, and it really can. I mean, Ingolstadt is 4 points behind. They're at 29.
It's a shame. I think they've played some much better football than a lot of the other sides down there recently. But quality over a season
to get the opening goal against Leverkusen with like 12 minutes to go. And then to lose a goal to a set piece, and you saw Valpurgis slamming his head against
about 4 minutes later as well.
Yeah, and it's like,
Fulham nearly won it at the end.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, I'd probably agree. I think Ingolstadt are probably gone.
Yeah.
It's not impossible, but it's highly
unlikely. It's a shame because they have played better, but quality of the season.
But I agree with you now. I actually did tip Wolfsburg to go down, but actually, now I'm going to reconsider that week by week, basically. Based on Hamburg's last four or five games, that team is not just devoid of confidence, but I think there's a real leadership issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, I'm very confused. I think Marcus Gisdol, ironically, has done a really, really good job up until this point. But I'm looking at his selections in that game. Bringing in an 18-year-old midfielder for his first start. Yeah. When you've got Wallace on the bench. Bit confusing there.
Yeah.
Big game.
But then to play in a way that isolates your striker. In that situation, you've got to play for the win. For the win, you know, and get Gregoric on there. And that was the only time that Hamburg looked dangerous, when they had Bakary Yata, again, 18 years of age, and Mikhail Gregoric off the bench. It was the only way they were going to threaten Mainz. And Mainz had four or five chances where they could have won the game. I think even can compare to the last two or three years, I think if Hamburg go into that playoff, I don't think they'll come through this time.
Yeah, I really don't.
It was definitely
not this time.
It was definitely that Mainz Hamburg game was definitely strange, because like you, I think you tweeted this, Russ. It really looked like both teams were not. They were trying not to lose more than they were trying to win, and maybe that's just part of the relegation zone. But if you're Hamburg, and you have Mainz coming to your place, Mainz has been a terrible team away from home this season. And you don't try to win this game, and instead you play an 18-year-old that has making his first appearance in one of the biggest games of the season. That was very strange.
But I get the feeling with Mainz though that you have a fighting mentality there.
Yeah,
the players.
That's the biggest difference to me.
The players are probably humble enough to accept we've had a really good run in the Bundesliga. It's going to come to an end at some point, but we're going to fight to get over the line. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Schmidt's lineup, he had Cordoba and Muto in the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. He had the Blazes in the lineup. He had players who could go and win the game for him.
Well,
if you look at Gisdol's lineup, bringing an 18-year-old defensive midfielder into the team when you have Valassi on the bench, mm-hmm, and you have Jung in there as well, you move Sakai to left back. Sakai's probably been maybe one of your only half decent midfielders in the whole season, mm-hmm, even though he's not a midfielder.
Yeah.
And you have Ostrzelek on the bench. Why are you playing a guy? I mean, this happens so many times. Sakai would be running forward, and because he's not left-footed, he would just kick the ball into the air. It was like a waste of possession.
Do you think it's a case of Gisdol feeling like he has to do something remarkable given the circumstances, as in to change something up and do something special? Or?
But do you have? I mean, like, I understand, you know, why you may want to change it from an attacking point of view. You may want to play two up front. I think Bobby Wood does get isolated really, really easily.
And he needs to be in the game.
Yeah, exactly. I think if you have Gregoric up alongside him, or even Lasoga, who I think is dreadful, then you might have a chance. But to change your left back for a guy,
yeah,
who's been one of your best players in midfield,
yeah,
and looks so out of his depth at left back,
mm-hmm,
that's a huge concern for me. And Matenia, the goalkeeper, second choice goalkeeper, he kept him in the game.
And Hamburg have to play on the final day at home against Wolfsburg, which you think is great, but Wolfsburg have collected more points away than at home this season.
But then at Schalke on Saturday.
And then
can you see them winning any of those games?
Well, I mean, Schalke, I mean, hey, you know, if anything, maybe they can beat Schalke, because Schalke had this like one sniff of Europe on the weekend, and then Freiburg just wiped them off the face of the earth. So,
but I guess if you're after Schalke losing on Sunday at Freiburg, they may have something to show. I mean, like,
yeah,
a lot of the players were quite critical
yeah,
of the performance. I think Goretzka came out and said that the players.
Fairman said, if it's a game that's like, we need to win this for something, you know, it's on the line,
yeah,
we can't come and play like that. So,
yeah. But I think we're all in agreement that Hamburg is the one that's.
And then who are they going to play? They're going to play Braunschweig, huh?
Yeah. That's wide open too. I mean, that's a whole.
True, Union are out now.
Stuttgart are going to go up,
and that's a case of Hanover or Braunschweig.
Braunschweig.
And then, of course, yeah. Well,
and if it's Hanover,
Andre Breitenreiter,
I know,
coming back.
But if it's Hanover too in the playoff, like, that's a team that was just 1 year removed from the Bundesliga, and we said this earlier in the season. If either Stuttgart or Hanover get in that playoff spot, I mean, that Bundesliga team that's in that spot above has got to look out.
Yeah. I mean, the Braunschweig team, so Union dropped off because they lost to Braunschweig, and that's pretty much left Braunschweig in third, and it's a race between Hanover and Braunschweig now. But I think Braunschweig are exactly the type of team that Hamburg would be like, oh, we're a bit nervous about playing, what are we going to do? But it's also exactly the type of team that Hamburg could beat with a last-minute free kick again. You know, and that's what worries me a bit. I think if Hanover were playing, I'd maybe think, maybe something a bit different.
But that's the thing about the last two games. I know that the Hamburg were poor going into those playoff games. They weren't great, but they had a little fighting spirit.
Yeah.
And I just don't see that right now. I look at even Holtby and Aaron Hunt, it's just not there. Mavrai has been really poor in the last few games, and I'm not saying they've down tools, definitely not, but
not yet.
I'm also not sure the quality is there. I mean, obviously you can question the bottle, but I don't think it's bottle. I think guys like Holtby have put themselves,
mm-hmm,
into that position, so they're hard-working players. But I don't see where the goals are going to come from, mm-hmm, and I don't see where they're going to create chances. And that's ultimately where they're going to fall down.
Mm-hmm.
They're not conceding a lot of goals, mm-hmm, not a huge amount of goals. I mean, they're not conceding any. I mean, they're not getting panned every week.
Yeah.
Because I think they've got a bit of solidity there.
Yeah.
I think with Papadopoulos and Mavrai, Dietmeyer, they've got something there, but I think going forward they're just hopeless.
Okay.
So I would agree. I think Hamburg are probably favourites to go be in the third bottom.
Yeah, well, we talked about it, Jonathan, too, about these relegation. Most of these relegation teams have let go of their manager, bar Mainz, and whoever was able to put their plan into place the best was the one who's going to stay up. And that's when that selection of having an 18-year-old in your midfield, that was reminded me of that conversation, because that means that the players that you have cannot get your ideas done better than this youngster coming in.
Well, maybe it's just a case, as I said to Ross earlier, maybe it's a case of Gisdol feeling that he needs to change something for the situation, and maybe younger players in those games feel less pressure and can take on a role like that because they have sort of, you know, younger players play with a bit more freedom sometimes. But in any case, it's a strange...
But
in a defensive midfield role, basically your pivot for the entire game, very strange.
Yeah. So Hamburg are definitely going to go down. That's what we're going to. That's where we're going to. That's where we're going to. That's the
in the playoff,
definitely. Mm-hmm. But they're going to be in that conversation again. But now let's get into other conversations. Let's get into our shouts from the Tribuna. So Ross, do you want to start?
Not really. No, but no, I'm kidding. actually, a really, really impressive performance from Cologne on Friday. I thought they were going to struggle. But to go and score four goals, I mean, in any game in the Bundesliga this season is a bit of a rarity.
Absolutely.
Again, Bittencourt turning up.
Oh, man.
Really impressing. Again, I mean, he's a big game player, you know, against Hoffenheim, scored the winner.
Big game players, I mean.
Right, but he only turns up when it matters. I mean, like, generally, 90% of the season, but he doesn't do enough. That's maybe why he's not a top-level player.
Yeah.
So, but I think, right now, Cologne probably... I would say are in pole position for Europe, which is a good thing. I think the squad can deal with it. I think, you know, you tweeted about Freiburg maybe having the concern that they don't have a squad deep enough to deal with the Europa League, and I would actually agree with that. I think if they did go into Europe, they'd really struggle and probably...
I had a thought on that. That's my shout, but continue.
Oh, sorry about that. You can go on that one. But I mean, if you look at Hertha, losing 4-1, Cologne, I think, are in pole position, and I could see them finishing in fifth place now.
Yeah, I have to say, we had that argument about Cologne earlier in the season about how conservative they were. Now, you could say I told you so.
You said they weren't going to make it.
What did you say? What did
you said
say?
They weren't going
to
make it.
Well, I said that they were too conservative to be more than a mid-table team. But I have to say...
You said they were going to drop
mid-table
off.
Mid-table mentality.
Well, they did drop off, first of all.
Mid-table mentality.
Yeah, but this performance on Friday was, I think, the best performance I've seen of them all season. And I think that kind of performance, I wish they had more of those... I wish they had that bravery more. They looked much more brave. They looked much more like gung-ho than I've seen from them all season. Maybe they were just excited to play the mediocre Bremen defense, but I think this is the kind of Cologne that I wish I had seen more this season. And that's why I said that they had this mid-table mentality, because they were just so sluggish most of the time. But this, I think, was... If they have more performances like this, they're going to be...
I don't know. They got a guy that scores, what, 25 goals from? I think they're doing more than a mid-table.
Yeah, but they needed somebody else besides him. And on Friday, they had somebody else besides him with some great finishes.
If you're a Cologne fan, direct all of your abuse to Davis
at
@davis_manalto.
So, anyways.
Your shout was about Freiburg, huh? Or was it about Cologne?
It's going to be about Freiburg, but
do you want to apologize to all the goat lovers out there?
Well, I mean, I think that was basically my apology, saying that I'm wrong and this is the best performance I've seen all season. But I actually disagree with both of you entirely on Freiburg. I actually think that they are much deeper than most of the teams that are competing.
What?
They have four attackers that Christian Streich can swap in and out.
Okay.
They have Nils Petersen.
That's good.
Yeah, Nir Leschner. They have Grifo. They have Hopper.
Won't be there after this summer.
You think he's going
to
be gone?
Grifo's gone.
Yeah.
And then they have three, and that's okay. But talk to me about
they have Philip. They have.
Yep.
Yeah, they have.
That's fine. That's good. I agree with you.
Yeah, but you assume that they're not going to sign players when they get into Europe. I mean, how many players do you think that you need to sign in order for you to believe that they have enough depth?
It's not a question of the number of players that they need to sign. I think Grifo will go. I don't know whether how many other ones will go. And this is all in the context of me loving Streich and Freiburg.
Yeah, of course.
Right? I just don't want them to have another yo-yo season. I think it'd be great for their fans to go to Bordeaux again. But I just don't want them to be in Europe and having to be in, you know, 15th for most of the season, because that's going to be really tough for them, because they are not sure they need another relegation, especially with the new stadium coming. Mm-hmm. It would actually make more sense if they just sort of finished just outside it. I know that that's not what football fans want to hear, because they want to go to European games, and I get that. But other than that, in midfield, Mike France isn't getting any younger.
Of course.
Right? Defensively, of course, they're coming on in some steps, and signing Stenzel on a permanent deal was important.
Yes.
Same with Niederlechner. But I think there are still two or three injuries away from not being the same team in many respects. You know, Streich isn't going to go out. Streich isn't going to go out and sign someone for 8-9 minutes because they don't have the money. And that's fine. And that's fine, because he only signs players that fits the system anyway.
Exactly.
That's fine. Absolutely. But I do worry that having to play league games and then, you know, a Europa League campaign on that squad with that age group, right, and the kind of intensity that he wants, it's not over the top, but, you know, two or three injuries or suspensions here and there, and then suddenly you're losing games 2-1 rather than winning them midweek, you know? And that's my only concern.
Yeah. No, I understand the concern. I just think that they are a much deeper team than you give them credit for. I mean, I think that they've had the most deep attack of almost any Bundesliga team outside of Dortmund and Bayern.
Attack is only one aspect of the team.
Of course, but yeah, but I think that...
The most deepest attack in Bayern.
And Dortmund.
Oh, come on. Hold on.
Well, I mean, well, Hoffenheim too, and Leipzig as well. I was on the top four.
And Hertha.
You think that Hertha's attack is better, is deeper than Freiburg's? Yeah, because I have numbers that would suggest
numbers,
others.
Okay.
Yeah, because only Ibisevic is the
team
only one.
Is that a team with a minus 15 goal difference?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Sure, but let me finish my shout. I think that they could attract a few players on loan.
Yep, fair enough.
To play in Europe, yep. Which is exactly what Schalke does.
And fails, but yeah.
And fails, but they still have the squad depth to play in the group stage.
Schalke's
Schalke have a massive... Like,
but I don't expect them to get out of the group stage, and I think that's fine.
Okay.
But I think that they're set up well enough to deal with six more games in the fall, and then get knocked out, and then basically have the second half of the season. I wouldn't want them to be in Augsburg and try to get into the round of 32, even though it's a monumental achievement.
Yeah, but they're not going to not play to win and get through. I mean, I agree. I think if they only have six games, they should be all right. But I still think they'll finish.
You think they're going to have more than six games, though?
Yeah, they're a good team.
Yeah, they're a good team. But
so there's no reason why they can't go to the Europa League group and finish second. Who's going to be top of that group? Celta Vigo. All right, fine. Then they go through second. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
but
then they have to
groups.
Come play Liverpool or something, you know, and that's uncomfortable. Sorry, Liverpool fans.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I just think that with how deep their attack is, with how many young defenders that they have.
Soyuncu
and Marc-Oliver Kempf.
Yeah.
Who is okay, but he's still developing and is
we
showing.
Can agree to disagree, it's fine.
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying that one of us is right. I just have more belief in Freiburg squad than both of you do.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I mean, I have
and
a lot of faith
that they,
in
they get, if they get two players on loan, which they seem to attract players on loan and do well with players on
loan. Hey, I'd go to Freiburg on loan. It's a great place, great people. Why not?
Exactly. So
Christian Streich, great beer. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that they'll be... I understand the concern, but I think that the depth wouldn't be the issue.
I think the summer will be decisive.
Yes, of course. But that's a hot take.
Yeah, thanks for that.
So, but yeah, anyways, I think that their squad is much better than both of you guys give it credit for.
Okay.
So, I mean, they have three attackers. They have three strong,
wow.
strong
back
attackers.
Point. Back to that
okay.
point. Okay, cool.
Yeah, they have three strong attackers. And I don't see how a team like that struggles. I mean, there are teams with one attacker, like Hertha Berlin and Vedat Ibisevic.
One attacker. There's Kalu as well. They've got Haraguchi.
Yeah, well, Kalu and Haraguchi. And how fit have both of them stayed?
I think Kalu's played like every game this season.
That's not true at all. Anyways, that's my shout. I think Freiburg are going to be okay.
Good, right. Well, I feel like I don't even need one now. I feel like I've kind of discussed one. I don't know. I'm tempted between giving a bit of love for Mario Gomez because he scored one and assisted one.
Yeah. He had a great game.
But that's kind of like... It's sort of all in the context of Mario Gomez having a great game because if Wolfsburg get relegated, he would be leaving. because he wants to be in the squad for 2018, and he can't do that if he's scoring goals away at Sandhausen. Mm. See, every podcast, Sandhausen gets in.
Sandhausen. I think Wolfsburg is probably a worse place to go.
I think my shout actually makes more sense if I have a bit of a gripe at these mid-table teams, and the two that come into mind here are Schalke and Eintracht Frankfurt, who you get to this stage of the season, and if it's the worst place to be if you're in mid-table, because you either have to play teams in the relegation who are fighting for survival, or you play teams at the top that are just better than you. But the way that Frankfurt and Schalke have not taken advantage of how close the Bundesliga is fairly disappointing. Niko Kovac said afterwards, "I think this is the worst performance of the season that we gave against Wolfsburg." And he said, "It's odd to say that because we had goal chances, but actually we were bad." And I think that says a lot. You know, Schalke, we talked about it earlier, you know, if Fehrmann's saying if this game means something, which it does, and we don't get it done, that's not acceptable. You know, Schalke win this, they're looking very tidy going into the last two games for maybe sneaking into Europe. And for a side that need to be in Europe every season, this whole sort of malaise at the end of the season, this sort of a pedestrian approach to sort of finishing off a campaign is unacceptable in my opinion. I think Frankfurt, okay, hands up, they had an outstanding beginning, and the start was great, and the drop off was inevitable in some respects, so maybe we can forgive them that, although I'm sure Kovac won't forgive his players the wasted opportunity. But from a Schalke's perspective, you know, Hassan said it brilliantly. He tweeted saying, "I don't understand this team." Yeah. And it's so true, you know. Yes, Freiburg is a difficult place to go. We've just been talking about them. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, they deserve all of the credit this season. But Schalke have had so many opportunities. You look at the Darmstadt game as well, where...
You look at both Frankfurt games too.
If they had won those, they put themselves in a much stronger position to sneak into Europe at the end and at the end of the season have some sort of review that includes some positives. Whereas at the moment, as much as it's a transitional year, big, big problems going into the summer.
That's the concern for me, I think, with Schalke, is that although I'm prepared to give Vancil a full year and then go into next season and then we can judge by December, I didn't think Schalke would be in this position at the end of the season. Yeah. I look at the way they're playing a lot of their games, they look lacking in inspiration. Mm. Where is that coming from? Is it coming from the coach? I don't know.
At this stage of the season, it's not on.
Sure, exactly. But I think it's like Goretzka was really quite forthright in his opinions after the game and was criticising the other players. But where is that attitude coming from? I don't know. Mm. I'm a bit concerned about where Schalke are going right now. And next season, if they bring in a few good players, then yeah, maybe they can get out of it. But
there's some pieces there, you know, Benteler, Bervidis, Fehrmann, there are some good pieces there. Obviously, you have to deal with Huntelaar's departure, and if Mbolo comes back and proves the striker that they need him to be. But they need to be much more consistent, and they need to not just be capable of producing good displays on a European night when their backs are against the wall, you know, and they come back and beat, you know, get the result against Gladbach, and then they should really get the result against Ajax, but don't get it done. You know, there have been real signs of life, but that's the problem for Schalke, and it's been a long-standing problem for Schalke. Signs of life, but not...
Well, it's interesting, because there was a few weeks ago, I think I've mentioned this a few times on the pod, is that there's been a lot of criticism about Weinziel and his ability to really get on his players. I think a lot of his players have said to him that he's not getting on them enough and trying to get on them to get better. And maybe that's kind of the exact opposite of Thomas Tuchel, in the fact that his players are upset with the fact that he's not being as intense enough as maybe they need to be. I mean, Weinziel said himself that Schalke should be a team that aims big, and to do that, they need to be pushed. Also, be pushed in that direction.
Absolutely, I think you make a very good point about the contrast between the two types of manager. I mean, Schalke, it feels like they don't have that intensity. They don't take that intensity into games.
How can that contrast be just two cities, very close cities?
Was it 34 kilometers or something?
Yeah, 34 kilometers away from each other. It's crazy. But I think that, that's definitely a good one. That Schalke, lack of inspiration, that could definitely carry into next season.
I mean, they're rebuilding all the facilities. Heidel's got a lot of work to do in the summer. The club in 4 or 5 years could be, you know, a really outstanding situation depending on the coach, but they have to get there first, and these are the difficult years.
But also, how do you attract players? I mean,
the club has a huge, history, but also the fan base, that area.
There's still they're basically the best case scenario to me seems like Yevhen Konoplyanka.
Yeah,
that's the kind of player that they'd be able to attract.
But that's their situation, and known to many respects is their fault, because they're not putting themselves in a position where they can offer European football. And if they don't do that, then it's a real problem, because you have all this wonderful fan base and great stadium, great area, great feeling to the club, but there's nothing else there other than the Bundesliga campaign. So.
Well, that'll do it for a very intense version of the Tribune podcast, because I think we're all sweating after that, and it has nothing to do with how warm it is in here. I think it was a very intense conversation. let's look at the next match day real quick. Of course, there's only two match days left in the Bundesliga, so it's really coming down to crunch time, and especially for the relegation race.
Note, last two match days, all games played all on Saturday at the same time.
Yeah, which is great for anybody that has to work that day. Leverkusen plays Cologne. Schalke plays Hamburg. Mainz will play Eintracht Frankfurt. Wolfsburg will play Gladbach. That's actually going to be an exciting game, I think. Back to being more exciting than it was in the first half of the season. Augsburg play Dortmund. Bremen play Hoffenheim. That's going to be a game as well. Darmstadt against Hertha Berlin. Freiburg against Ingolstadt. And then Leipzig against Bayern, which is... now has completely devoid of meaning now that the title race.
I'm sure the media will find meaning in that one.
Yeah. All right, but that'll do it for the Tribuna podcast this week. Be sure to like our Facebook page follow us on Twitter as well, at Tribuna Podcast. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, and be sure to rate it if you do like it. And be nice, because we know that the internet has a lot of trolls out there, so don't be one of them. You can follow Jonathan on Twitter at JohnBlog66, 2 G's and 2 6's, Ross Dunbar at RossDunbar93, and me at Davis_VanOptorp. And that'll do it. We'll talk to you next time.